going on, everybody? And thank you all again so very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, rowing along beside me, trying to stay out of trouble, is the man, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here at Skellican Studios. Very sore, but happy to be here. I had a wonderful time with my family at Scarborough Fair. It's a Renaissance fair that they do every year here in Waxahachie. It was a good time. Lots of cool costumes. I love all the cosplay and all that. Unfortunately, I did see several men with their bows strung backwards, but they just don't know. But no, we had a really, really good time. Luke didn't want to go this year. He's finally getting to that age where I guess he was too cool. He's not. I know he would have went, but he had some kind of video game or movie conference he had to attend online virtually. And that's what he was up
what?
At. And he was like, no, I can't go. I can't miss it. I have to watch this. And I'm like, okay, well, you're lost. The weather was perfect and we had a pretty good time, but not as much fun as me and you had the previous Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
When we drove down to Jacksonville, Texas. I didn't even know there was a Jacksonville, Texas, but there is. It was about a 3-hour drive to East Texas. East Texas is beautiful. All the water out there, all the tall trees compared to where we live. We went to Bob Lee Bowes, and boy, what an experience. Like, it was something I wasn't prepared for. In my mind, going there, I thought we were going to see this huge facility. There's going to be 30 employees. We're going to get to try out all these cool bows. Little did I know, it's a father-son operation.
I mean, handmade.
Handmade bows. We got to shoot recurves. We got to shoot long bows. And I'm telling you, they are the best bows, hands down, I've ever shot.
It's great.
I mean, and I've shot a lot. I'm not going to throw any brands under the bus. I've shot a lot of other bows over the years, and none of them shoot as good as this Bob Lee.
Started building bows in 1951. The first original bow was there. We got to see it.
Yeah, we got to see number one.
Yeah,
that's right.
It was great.
Really cool. The guys were really cool. Rob and JJ.
Amazing dudes.
Excellent people. They couldn't have been more gracious. It was a good time. I mean, I got Rob, let me shoot his longbow. That's like Jimi Hendrix asking you to play his guitar, right? It was incredible.
He probably won't ever ask you again.
But probably not. No, I'm probably not welcome back. But I got a lot of cool gear here. I got a t-shirt. I got a hat. We had a really good time. It's one of those things I'll be thinking of for years and years to come.
I think it's my favorite bow now.
For me, it is, definitely.
It's just so much. Y'all are going to see more video footage of it. Kyle and I have got some stuff planned coming up now that we got this out of the way. So, yeah, we got some cool stuff to show y'all coming up in the outdoors. So
anyway, so I'm sore because I've been shooting so much. My shoulders aren't ready for it.
Yeah.
Because it's so much fun. Speaking of fun, though.
Yeah.
Let's get into some pretty cool stories.
Hit me with it.
Check this out. It says, I wouldn't call myself a complete believer in the paranormal, but I'm not someone who writes it off completely. I'm a skeptic who's open and willing to believe if given proof. I have family that is deeply involved with this type of stuff and has their own experiences with the paranormal. I've got a few things that happened to me that I can't entirely explain normally. However, the one I'm about to describe is by far the one that has no type of logic that can debunk, at least to my knowledge. To better understand my experience, you have to understand the layout of my bathroom, for it happened to me while I was in the shower. On my second floor, there are 4 rooms counting the bathroom. You walk up the stairs and will see one room straight across from the base of the stairs, while 2 rooms follow the wall on the right to said room, finishing with a room mirroring the one at the base of the stairs. Once you enter the bathroom, immediately to the right are my sink and mirror. Now, the sink is about 4 feet off the ground. Next to the sink is my bathtub or shower, blocked by a wall so it doesn't connect to my sink. Now, straight across from the door is the toilet. I had the door closed, and no one else was in the bathroom, including pets. Since my shower is also a bathtub, there's a ledge where family members will keep shampoos, body washes, etc. I began to wash my hair and place the shampoo on the ledge. As I went to put it down, I placed it a bit too close to the edge, and it fell off. I heard the bottle roll around a bit and ultimately come to a stop. I thought to myself, oh, well, I'll just grab it when I get out. I begin to finish up in the shower. I get out, grab my towel, and I look on the ground to find the shampoo bottle. However, I can't. After a few seconds of searching, I looked up and I saw the bottle sitting perfectly on the sink. Now again, the sink is about 4 feet off the ground, and I definitely heard it rolling around on the ground, and there was a wall separating my bath and sink. I asked my family members if they did it, or if someone was just messing with me, but to this day, no one has ever claimed to have done it. Does anyone have any form of explanation for this? Thanks, all you do, Cheryl. Wow. So she heard the shampoo bottle fall and roll around on the ground, and when she got out, she couldn't find it. And it was sitting perfectly upright on the sink, like somebody placed it up there.
There's several.
Now, maybe it really is a prank, you know? No. Like maybe your brother or something did that.
It's a prank by the universe.
And doesn't want to confess to it just to mess with you. Or it's something truly paranormal. We've heard of things like that. Like, I mean, you've even talked about your son one time threw something away, remembers throwing it away. A couple hours later, said item is still in his pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what is that? Glitches in time?
There are several.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't know what time slip wouldn't explain it. That's not what it is. I don't know what it is, but something's up. Do you remember that time in my house? Long time ago, there was like a...
I knew what you were about to say already. Right? Yep.
Particular toy that was missing.
It was a football.
And we couldn't find it for weeks. And then one day we were in the house and all of a sudden we heard a noise and that football fell off the bookshelf.
Mm-hmm.
Just on its own.
So, I have no idea. It wasn't up there. We have no idea where it went. Literally lost a football, a Nerf football, and then it just reappeared.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
And that happens. There's a lot of stories of people having this happen to them.
Yeah, I think it happens way more often than you realize.
It's got to be just glitches in the matrix.
Because you may not realize it.
Yeah.
How many times have you lost an item and you go look in a drawer like where it's supposed to be? You check it. It ain't there. For whatever reason, 30 minutes later, you'll come back and check. It's not there. And then on the third time you check in, it's there. And you're like, man, I know I looked in here.
Yeah.
I know I looked in here.
Yeah. That happens to me when I open the refrigerator all the time.
I check my wallet all the time, but money never appears in there.
No, right?
Never.
It seems to get less and less. There's fewer and fewer bills in there, but there's just not any more. It doesn't build. I have something I need to tell you. Everybody knows that we love the headlines, and you know I love to hit you with it. Black-eyed girl transforms into pale manted humanoid.
Well, that's definitely a cool title.
That's a cool headline. Listen to this. My story is from 1988. I was just moving out of the house for the first time and moved to Crestline, California with a couple of buddies. Now, this story involves my buddy Nate and myself. He was helping me move into my room, and by then we moved most of my things, and it was the end of the night, probably around 10 p.m. My room was facing the back of a slope of a hill. Now, right above the hill was another house, and there were no fences. So neighbors and the kids I noticed throughout the day were playing and just going through the yard, you know, like no big deal. When my buddy and I were in the room, we looked out the window and saw a couple of kids. Now, it was pretty late at the time and very dark, and the kids were just playing around, having a good time. I go and get another beer for Nate, and when I come back, he says the kids went away, and there was just one girl left, and it's kind of weird. We're looking, trying to see if she was okay, because she was just standing there, kind of facing to the east. So when she started moving slowly, and we noticed that. Now, I don't know if it was the moonlight or what, but her skin started becoming more pale. Yeah. Now, that's really weird, but she was dressed in normal clothes, and just at that time, she started to put her head up to look around. Now, we didn't say anything because we were already a little freaked out, but then she turned and looked at us, and her eyes were all black. Maybe a couple of seconds later, it was almost reddish black. It was really weird. Now, of course, we're a little freaked out, so we slammed the window closed, pulled the blinds down over it, and as we peeked through the window to see what was there, it was almost like it was a skinwalker. But it was a different creature, something out of the Men in Black movie. It was all quiet, but it wasn't a little girl anymore. It was almost like a human body, but with the arms and legs that were double-jointed. And walking, almost crab-like. Now, this is very weird. And at this point, it was just screaming like crazy. So at this point, we ran down the stairs and trying to contemplate whether we should just get in the car and leave. But we stayed inside for about an hour, and my buddy Nate and I were having anxiety attacks. And at one point, Nate decided, you know what? The heck with it. I'm just going to get out of here. So we ran down across the deck to go to the car. Luckily, the car was an automatic, the push button. So you can just jump in and press it, right? And we're rocking and rolling. Well, when we're backing up, you have to go slow. So the very front end where you could swing it out on Main Street out of your driveway, or you'll hit the back of the car. But at this point, we were going too fast. He went backwards way too fast, hit the bottom where the tow hitch was, and the truck slid back on that. And the front end went up. He said, we're basically vertical for a little bit. He said, we're freaking out, losing our minds. I kid you not, at that point, I was able to use my body weight rocking around for us to feel like get going. And then we went forward. When we looked down, there was a creature right in front of us. We felt cold chills course through our body. It was a humanoid. Well, almost humanoid, but it had no hair. It was a pale creature, almost like that of an insect, but its arms and legs were both disjointed. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. This thing looked exactly like a large praying mantis with the arms and the legs. That's my story. Thanks, Andrew.
Now, how in the world could you ever concentrate on anything in your life after you saw a small black-eyed child transform into a mantis crab-walking being?
You couldn't. Your world would never be the same.
I would need a lot of medication and a lot of therapy.
There's no way.
I mean, I already need a lot of medication and therapy.
Yeah, but I'm like, I don't know that you need any more. I mean, you just need to start it.
I self-medicate.
That's right.
But I can't imagine seeing something like that.
No, absolutely not. Well, like you pointed out, how much would that affect your life?
It would have to impact you for the rest of your days.
And not just in ways of
fear. You can't be like nonchalant and be like, oh, yeah, I remember this one time I saw a kid transform into a crab-walking mantis humanoid being.
You never seen that before? Bro, it's pretty cool. If you ever get a chance, check it out. Yeah, no.
Good on you for not giving your real name. I don't think I would tell anybody that story. I mean, you can do it anonymously like you have. But
what was it? Like, that's the first time I've ever found a story to where a black-eyed kid transformed into something. So instead of it being the evil that we thought it about, is this their, like, the mantis race of aliens? Is this their way of blending in?
Yeah, they're here. They've been here, right? And
we have races of glimmer men, and we have black-eyed kid mantis beings. I have a feeling this is just like Men in Black. One day we're going to learn it. It's just... This is like the truck stop of the universe is what the world is.
Do you remember the years ago there was this whole craze about spider beings?
Yes.
And they were from
the
moon.
And flesh jackets and the download of the goo. Yeah, I remember all of this.
They lived on the moon, but they were secretly here among us.
We had to have downloads to your flesh jacket.
Yeah, you'd have to. If you went to like Mount Shasta, you could download it quicker or something. It was some crazy... What was the guy's name? It was like a Russian guy, remember?
Yeah.
Heddlebob?
Heddlebob or Hadabob or something. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, what was that on?
I don't remember, but that was the whole story I have to laugh at because if it's real,
no.
Dude, it's the world is ending if it's real.
It's not real.
Hope not.
I enjoy it. It's entertaining, but like some things
are a bit
too much.
You don't want a spider being to be real, Kyle?
No, hell no.
An 8-foot tall spider being?
I hate spiders. Why would I want a spider bee?
Always hated spiders.
Always. Do not like them. They'll bite you. My friend's arm almost rotted off because one just bit him while he was sleeping.
They bite you for no reason.
They do. They're
dead silent all the time.
Like, I like snakes. They don't mess with you unless you step on one. But like a spider, you can be dead asleep. It'll just bite you for no reason.
Just because it can.
Have you seen those guys that like farm those cranberry bogs and millions of like wolf spiders are crawling all over them because they're trying to get out of the water?
No, because I'm normal and watch normal things on television.
Well, my phone hears me talking about my fear of spiders and then it, you know, puts those videos towards the front.
In a cranberry bog.
Yeah.
Ugh. Speaking of cranberry bogs, folks, if you like creepy things in the water, stick around after the break. I'm going to be talking about some creepy encounters in the seas, the lakes, and the rivers as we're getting time for some more strange water monsters. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
All right, y'all, here we go. As I sit down to record this, it's beautiful weather, so I hope wherever y'all are at right now listening, hope the weather's great, hope you're having a wonderful day, heck, a wonderful month. I hope everything's going well. Because we're getting into this kind of weather, and we're getting closer and closer to summertime, now is as good a time as any to deal with, I guess, the elephant in the room, right? The river monsters and the lake monsters you might bump into. I don't know if you're gonna, but it would be awesome to see one. I don't know if you'd want to bump into one, right? I don't know that I would want to run into one of these, but still be interesting to see. What are your takes on all these? It's wild. Looking back in history is the things that we've covered here, but going back through stories and digging through books, you notice that the majority of these sightings come from years ago. That rarely you will still get some previous sightings or whatnot. It's blur, but from a while back is where they come from. Now, could it have been misidentification? Is that all that this is when it comes to these water creatures? Probably so, right? Probably so. When you start taking into consideration the size of the body of water per the size of the creature that's in that body of water, what it would take to feed it, what it would take. Yeah, it's probably so. But the same could be said with any of these other cryptid creatures that we discuss. Bigfoot, especially Bigfoot, right? Same thing. Would it be out there? I mean, is it? Or is it not quite 100% flesh and blood? Is there something about these that are just as different as Bigfoot or any of his big hairy hominid friends, right? There's the only explanation is the two that it always feels right is either they're not real at all or there's some sort of crossover in a plane or a dimension or whatever it is. And maybe water itself is what they use as that medium. I think back to the movie Constantine, right? You start talking with Keanu Reeves. Remember, he has to put his feet in the water. Then he can shocks himself with a bulb, and now he's in hell. And then he comes back, and he talks about water, this, all of these things. So it just makes me wonder, right? I'm not saying that's what it is, but it is very interesting. But I've got one here I'm going to kick off with. From Owensboro, Kentucky. Now, this took place back in October 1st, 1904. That's right, y'all, a while back. There was some reports published that a huge monster, large dimensions is what it says, huge, had been seen several times in the Green River. And this is what it says. It says, there is a great deal of excitement about the river monster that has been seen several times below Rumsey. It recently devoured half a horse near Wrightsburg. The monster was seen crossing the river at Rumsey Monday night. Its size is estimated all the way from the size of a horse to the size of a house. Some declare it to be about 200 feet long. Now the correspondent fails to relate in what condition the horse was when it was devoured by the monster. The theory is being advanced by the residents of the Rumsey neighborhood that the monster is a seahorse which has escaped from a circus. This was printed in the Paducah Evening Sun in 1904. That same night it all went down. So, first of all, what's a seahorse, right? We all know what a seahorse is. What do you think they mean when they say this monster is a seahorse? And first of all, 200 feet long, the size of a house. Let's pump the brakes. That thing would be massive. I mean, that's a tried and true Godzilla, right? That's what we're dealing with at this point. But what could that have been? What comes up? Could there have been a crocodile? Could there have been alligators? Could there have been something along the lines that make them see whatever this is and turn it into that? I don't know. I have no idea. But eating half a horse is, you know, that's pretty good work. Here's one from the Winfield Free Press. Okay. This came from 1909. This is in Kansas. It says that the sea serpent of the Atlantic Coast resorts will have to take a back seat for an amphibious creature that's reported in the Walnut River here by W.H. Kinney and H.G. Case, who were both fishing near the mouth of Black Creek Wednesday. Kinney bears the evidence of conflict of some kind. His wrist was gashed as with a saw. The wound, he says, was inflicted by the river monster
when it made a desperate effort to get into a boat occupied by himself and his companion. The two men were fishing for bass and channel cat, when they saw the monster jump out of the water after a fish which Case had pulled up. The first sight of the creature led the men to believe that it was a huge eel, but its second appearance was more terrifying. The thing dashed close up to the boat after one or the captured fish, going after that one, and it had a long horn on its snout that measured about 6 foot in length. I don't know if that was the horn or the snout, right? But it says its general facial appearance was like that of a catfish, except for the sharp horn. It was the horn that cut Kenny. Now, the strange visitor managed to crawl over the bow of the boat before the occupants could recover from their amazement. It impaled a bass, which was lying on the bottom of the boat, and then went overboard again. And as the creature slid back into the water, it slapped its tail, which seemed to have sponge-like qualities, so fiercely that the air was filled with the fine spray that blinded and drenched the fishermen. So a horn-nosed, monstrous beaver? The attack of a killer beaver? Like a monstrous platypus? What was that thing? 6 foot, was it 6 foot long, the river monster? I'm assuming that that's what they're trying to get at. It had a horn on its nose, 6 foot long. But how inefficient is that? Trying to use this horn on its nose to pick up fish. You got a mouth. Can't just bite it. Just pick it up like everything else. Every other monster bites it with its mouth. What's going on? So, while I was going through these, I came across one of a fish. This is from the Pensacola Journal of August 9th, 1914. So down in Florida, this took place on the Crystal River. It's what it sounds like. This is what it says. It was a monster sighted by a party from Port Inglis, and it was sought after this by a hunting party went out to find it. Mr. J.W. Gilley of Port Inglis reports that while coming up the river last Saturday in company with L.R. Brown, H. Sweeney, and W.H. Uran, they sighted a huge fish about a mile from the Crystal River at Miller Creek. This is what I said was posted up in the Crystal River News. Now it says this, as they drew nearer, the monster gave a tremendous splash which threatened to drown the party as well as everything else on the river, and Mr. Gilley made the discovery that it was a grampus whale. Mr. Gilley has had much experience on the briny deep and says he knows a whale when he sees one. He says that it was 50 or 45 foot in length, and he hadn't had anything stronger than coffee that morning either. Several other people have reported seeing the whale within the last few days. There is some talk of getting up an expedition and making an effort to capture the fish with harpoons. Now, I like how Mr. Gilley has to clarify he'd just been drinking coffee. One of two things. Either that was a thing everybody thought if you said something crazy back then, or Mr. Gilley had a little problem that the town might have known about, and he just had to let him know he hadn't started dabbling yet. Either way, covered both bases. Good for him. But being a whale, brackish water, what do I know? I mean, could they? I've seen recent reports now of online of reading things to where they believe that there are sharks that are up in the creeks and river channels there in Houston, like up underneath the main bridges area. Dudes were fishing and getting cut and broke off by things. So they're saying, hey, mate, what if it's sharks? We don't know yet. We know bull sharks can do it, right? Swim up there. What about a whale? What do I know, right? What about a whale? So it got me to thinking about something. And this something is what goes on in Florida. Now, look, there's all kinds of water monsters in Florida, right? All kinds. Florida's a wild place. But I found a story here. It's a very popular story. Pretty upsetting. But this took place in March of 1962. What ended up going down on a 7-foot Air Force raft was a group of teenage boys. And they were all going to paddle out to a not completely submerged, semi-submerged, let's say, shipwreck out there of the USS Massachusetts. And it's about 2 miles offshore out in the Gulf there in Florida, and just sits on a sandbar. That's where they were going to paddle out. It starts there in, I believe they started in Pensacola, is where they were going to paddle out from. Fort Walton area. Let's say the Fort Walton area. The boys were all from the Fort Walton area. And their name, Eric Rule, Warren Felly, Larry Bill, Bradford Rice, and Brian McClary. Mr. Brian McClary was the only one to survive what's about to go down. And the story he tells is pretty wild. Now, the story he related to people wasn't the story that was covered in the news. It wasn't the things that he had talked about privately, like, you know, to the investigators. So they had kind of taken it and made some crazy stuff up. And I don't know if it was, you know, just the thing that went down, but this is what I'm going to talk to you about. It took place 1962. This is what was published in the Ocala Star-Banner. And this says from March 26th. And the title of the article was Four Teenage Skin Divers Still Missing After Raft Is Abandoned. It gives a list of the boys' names, as I was telling you, and then again of Brian. Brian was actually found asleep the next day on the beach. The raft had washed ashore. There was shoes, flippers or fins, and face masks all still in the raft. Now, McCleary goes on to say, Brian was going on to say that he and the boys, they were trying to moor or tie the raft off to a buoy. And they failed. And when they failed, it says that they abandoned this raft and attempted to swim to shore. And he goes on to say that Bill and another kid, Rule, was Eric and Bill were separated, right? So Mr. Larry and Mr. Eric, they were both separated during this swimming ashore. That was a story that was published. And okay, why would you abandon the raft? You couldn't get it to moor up. Why jump out and swim to shore? Just paddle it, right? Paddle it back. There's been a few more accounts. Fate magazine stepped in 1965 and did an article over this whole deal. They kind of went into a little more depth about it. I'll touch on some of it as it goes down, and I will tell you a little bit about what was written. This is, so Brian actually published this in 1965, and it was titled My Escape from a Sea Monster. It says, after a time, the wind and the rain and the waves subsided and a thick fog rolled in. Now, Brian describes the silence and stillness, writing that not a wave rippled, not a fish broke the water, not even a seagull called. He said for the first time in his life that he was truly scared. Now, Mr. Rice went on to say that we're dead. We died in the storm. And Rule assured him that they would be fine. What ended up happening, what they believe ended up happening, was that bad weather rolled in. The boys said the weather was amazing when they first set out. Couldn't have been a better day to go out and paddle. Said there was a nice little breeze. Everything was great. Said the water was so calm that it had cleared up. You were getting to see some good clarity. So the boys started paddling out, right? They're taking turns paddling out there. But as they get closer, whitecaps start popping. The water gets a little more reckless, let's say. The skies begin to gray up. At this point, the boys were like, let's go ahead and bounce. We're not going to stay for this. So the reason they abandoned it, turns out it might not have been, oh, we're going to moor it to the buoy. The problem was, as the tide began to shift and the weather began to get rough, the boys couldn't row hard enough to catch up with it as it drug them out into the open ocean. They tried all they could. They were trying to wave at anybody that could pass by. If they could even see a boat, they weren't having any luck, right? At this point, they're panicking, which, of course, anybody in their right mind would. It also began to get dark. Then it starts raining. That's when all this stuff starts. They're trying to get going. They said they can only see, Brian said, we can only see about 25 foot. There's no wind. He said the water was unusually warm. Said it was crazy warm. And that they were just stuck in it. They're just getting pounded. They said, finally, Larry, one of the boys, Larry, said he heard something. He said, I hear a boat or something. They all start listening. He says what they hear is what they think is not like such a rumble, but maybe a low humming noise. And then they also notice that they smell the odor of rotting or dead fish, and the waves, they start hearing splashing as if something large is getting closer, large enough that the water starts rolling over the side of their little raft. Then they hear a second one. Now, at this point, the fog's around them, right? Brian says that they were able to look through some of the fog and they noticed what they thought was a telephone pole with a bulb on top, sticking about 10 foot out of the water. They were like, oh, we must be getting close to maybe there's a dock. Maybe there's something here. At this moment, the telephone pole bent. It bends and goes down. And as it kind of goes under the water, they said there was silence. And then a very high-pitched whine starts coming up out of this, out of the water and coming up through the fog. At this point, of course, is like I said, is when they all panic. Now, why they leave the boat, we don't know. We don't know why they didn't just keep paddling. We don't know if, what was going on. But at this point, they say that they donned their flippers and masks and they went in. They're just trying to get away from this thing. Brian reported that in the water, it was kind of slimy, like there was something on it. Like it was brownish, brackish water. There was something on it that was, they didn't know, some kind of crusty slime on the top. So this time, they say they go to swim back towards the wreck. Yeah, so some boys are going this way. They can't hear. They hear splashing. They start hearing hissing. They see that the fog is clearing, but it's raining. Now, it is not completely dark, but getting dark. And they said that it's the water is getting more and more rough. Then they heard a scream. They heard the young Felly boy scream that it's got Brad. It's got Brad. That's what Brian reports. And then there's no noise. So he starts calling back. They start calling for the other boys. Nothing. Now, at this point, they're all swimming, all going for it. Now, McCleary reported that some time had passed before he became aware that his buddy Bill was no longer with him in Rule. He said, then, of course, there's flashing, there's lightning. They can see what's left of the USS Massachusetts sticking up. There's another flash that said that they can see Rule swimming ahead of Brian. He's trying to get to the ship. Again, he reports that seeing this telephone pole look thing come up out of the water, he could tell it's got two eyes and a mouth, and then it just lowers itself down on Rule, and they both vanish beneath the surface. McCleary said he doesn't know how he made it to shore. He doesn't even remember making it to shore. He says the next thing he remembers from that is he wakes up, and he's at the Pensacola Naval Hospital base, or the base there, the hospital. And while he's there, he starts talking to the SAR director, the search and rescue guy. And it's at that point whenever they tell him, we've not found any of your friends. We've not found any of them. A week later, Mr. Brad Rice's body washes up on shore. From what you can read online, what you can find online, is it appears that it was just a drowning. They didn't find anything out of the ordinary. Didn't look like, you know, there was nothing like an attack. I'm assuming there was no injuries for what I mean as like a sea monster attack. Now, I'm sure there was things on the body from being in the water in the ocean that long, but they said they determined it to be from drowning. I guess you could say, you know, you could go at any level or any angle with this thing here, but I don't understand the crazy story as to why, you know, why Brian would feel the need to make up this story. According to those around him, he had to spend time in an institution for a while, that he had a severe break. He had a severe nervous breakdown, went on in life. This affected him completely, went on in life to where he passed away in 2017, but had trouble dealing with drugs and alcohol the rest of his days from the trauma that he had heaped upon him at that moment. So I don't know that it would be just they all fell out of the boat and they all drowned but one. I don't know that there was a monster there, but something truly happened to them while they were there out there in the ocean. But that's not the only strange thing to kick off in Florida. There's multiples. You could go on for days talking about the stuff that's spotted in Florida, but we'll roll one up to the Lake Worth Lagoon there in Florida, y'all. Yeah, Lake Worth Lagoon. It's their lagoon. It's there. I believe it's in Palm Beach County is actually where it's at, in Palm Beach County. But back in the summer, in August of 2009, two fellas, they were both representatives of the Lagoon Keepers, which, you know, does all the stuff of keeping. It's a nonprofit to maintain and clean all the waterways there in Palm Beach County, which sounds awesome, right? To be a fun little gig to go do, especially down there, till this goes down. The two fellas' names, Dan Serrano and Greg Reynolds. And they got a call that got sent out to the Lake Worth Lagoon. They said, hey, look, we think there's a log out here, right? So you can imagine, I've seen them out there. You know, you get out there in the lakes, big logs wash out. You got to go out and get them. The BRA here in around in where we're at, which is the Brazos River Authority, they'll do things like that. They go out, people go retrieve it and all that. You don't want skiers or boats running over it, so you go grab it. I'm assuming that's what was going on with Dan and Greg. They were like, all right, let's go do it. They wheel out there, you know, and they're like, hey, all right. And they get out there close, and that's when they realize that's not a log, and this thing's still alive. Like, what is this? So Greg goes on to say that he and Dan tried to catch up to it, but every time they'd get to within about 10 foot of it, the creature would dive. So that's when they start calling it, and you look all this up. It's called the Muck Monster, y'all. The Muck Monster. Apparently, it was very elusive. Very, very elusive. Dan goes on, Mr. Serrano goes on, and this is what he's quoted in saying, I didn't know what it was. I was like, hey, look. And as we moved over and we saw it, it was different. It was very different. We knew it right then. And it was even making an unusual wake. We saw it move along, creating some deep ripples, and then it just dipped deeper underwater. The thing I could tell y'all to do is you can go online and find video footage that was shot. Yeah. Yeah. Greg shot some video footage of it, uploaded it. You can find it all the, you know, the Muck Monster stuff, all of this, and check it out. It does look interesting. I don't know. I'm going to be the first to tell y'all, I'm the worst when you're looking at like photographs, especially in the water, is if I don't have something that I know, like an automobile in the picture or something that I feel very comfortable with knowing what it is, when you ask me to judge the size of it, I don't know. If you've never been to a body of water and they show you a bridge over the body, well, you over the water, and then these ripples, you don't know, right? You have no idea really how big it is unless you've been over said bridge or you've boated past it. So I don't know how big it is. Looking at how big it is, I would guess manatee, but that's not what it is. I don't believe. Greg said that a channel marker 10 is the first time that they saw the unknown creature. Here's a quote. It says, I hollered out and said, what's that? We followed it, started taking video. Now, this is what he says. It's not a shark or a manatee. Sharks would have their fins above the water. This is something much different. Now, as far as I know, they've not found it. You can go and check it out. You know, they've made shirts about it. This Muck Monster blew up since then. Now, there's some old stuff where they talk about down there from like the 1800s where there was allegedly sea monster sightings in and around this area. But I don't know that that's what this is, you know, especially from all the way back then. I don't know if that's what this truly would be, but it is very, very interesting that it happened that quick, right? Like 2009 for them just to hop out and find one is fascinating to me. I'm like, that is very, very interesting. I have another very, very interesting one, but I want to move y'all to another spot. Very strange spot. I've talked about this before. Pennsylvania. I'm going to go from Florida to Pennsylvania, to Fayette County. All right. Fayette County, Pennsylvania, the Cheat River. The Cheat River is a 78-mile long tributary of this river that there's Monongahela. What is this? What are you? Man, we need to rename all this stuff, or we need to phonetically. Monongahela? I'm going to say it's the Monongahela River. This took place, or this was actually first published in an account in a Philadelphia newspaper in 1893. On July 31st, again, middle of the summer. So like I said, I'm prepping y'all to watch out for these monsters. This is what it says. For months, past farmers living near the line ferry have been missing sheep, lamb, pigs, and even young calves, and to say nothing of innumerable chickens, turkey, and geese. I don't like how y'all put the fowl at the end, right? Doggone, I like chicken more than I like lamb. I'll say it. says up until a few days ago, they blamed the Italians and other laborers engaged in grading the state line road with stealing the missing animals. Well, that's not nice. Right off the bat, we're like, I know who's got it. He's got it. The guy with the big mustache that can turn it into really good food, that's who's got it. Maybe y'all ought to give it to the Italians. That might be the move. Wouldn't be eating chicken and dumplings. You could have chicken carbonara. Isn't that what it is? That's what I'll take over chicken. I love chicken and dumplings, but still, I'm just going to say. So, not a night since. Early last spring has passed without some farmer being woken up in the morning to find that he'd been robbed of a fat pig, a young calf, a sheep, two or three choice lambs, or half a dozen of his finest barnyard fowls. This guy's awesome. Effort was made to catch the thief, but every attempt proved a failure, and everybody had about settled down to the belief that the laborers along the railroad were doing the stealing. But the mystery has at last been cleared up in the middle of at least three of the most reputable farmers of the neighborhood. They will not at present allow their names to be made public, and it was only after assuring the correspondent to keep their names out of print that they told him what they know about this monster of Seltzer's Hole, as it's called. They each saw the monster on different occasions, but at about the same hour in the morning, and give about the same description of it. I first saw the monster, said one of the farmers, just at daybreak last Tuesday morning. I got up very early to go to Uniontown and started out to the pasture field to get the horses. And just as I opened the barnyard gate, I heard a terrible racket down by the calf pen, which was immediately followed by the stampede of every living object in the barnyard in the direction of the house. The chickens, the turkey flew with loud cries of distress into the trees in the yard and on the roof of the house, and the cattle and pigs crowded around me, trembling with fright and uttering pitiful outcries of terror. Man, oh man. All right, I'm already geeked out, right? Just everything freaking out. Something down at the calf pen had given them a terrible fright, but what it was, I could not imagine. But I resolved to find out, and pushing my way through the trembling animals, I started down to the calf pen, and when I got within 20 yards of the pen, the most horrible-looking monster the mind could conceive clambered over the strong rail fence that surrounds the calf pen, carrying in its mouth a three-day-old calf. Yeah, I tried to turn and fly to the house for protection, but if the monster had been within a foot of me, I could not have moved an inch. I tried to cry out, but I could not make a sound. My tongue seemed to be made of lead, and my eyes were fixed on the awful-looking creature that was slowly moving off toward the river, still carrying its calf in its mouth. It looked to me to be the size of an Alderney cow, although its legs were very much shorter than its body and somewhat longer. I guess its body was a little bit longer, just with short legs. Says its back was ridged and humped in the center, and from behind each shoulder protruded something which was neither a wing, fin, arm, nor claw, though it resembled each of them. Its tail was long and thick and resembled that of a crocodile, except that the end was forked, resembling that of a monstrous fish. Its feet were webbed and resembled those of a bear in outline, and were as large as a peck measure. The body was covered with big, heavy scales which moved as the monster walked. But the head of the dragon was the most fearful-looking part of all. It was as large as that of a horse and covered with large, warty knots. Directly in the forehead and just below the eyes was a monstrous, jagged, horn-like protuberance. Just back of the ears were two similar-looking horns, though somewhat smaller. There we go. Another horn on the nose, right? The eyes were as large as a teacup, and stuck out from their sockets at least an inch and a half. The mouth of the beast I could not see very well, for the struggling calf was in it. But it must have been exceedingly large, for the monstrous jaws reached almost across the calf's body. The monster had traveled at least 100 yards towards the river before I recovered sufficiently to move. I was not asleep, but as wide awake as I was ever in my life. I resolved to follow the monster at a safe distance and see where it went. Rushing into the house, I seized my double-barreled shotgun, and without waking the rest of the family, I started after the ugly beast and again caught sight of it just as it reached a clump of bushes on a cliff which overhangs the river near Line Ferry. It was broad daylight by this time, and with both barrels of my gun cocked, I followed into the monster's wake. When I reached the cliff, I looked down over it and saw the monster just crossing the road and making for the big rock in the water's edge, alongside Seltzer's hole. It turned around when it reached the river's bank and glared back at me, and then, with something between a growl and a bellow, leaped into the water and disappeared from sight. I went down to the bank and watched for sight of the monster for over an hour, but as it did not again show itself, I went home. I did not tell my folks what I had seen, but simply said that somebody or something had stolen one of the calves during the night. Neither did I say anything about it to any of the neighbors until this morning. I knew they would not believe me and might start a report that I was going crazy. But this morning, Mr. Redacted here came over to my house and, after fidgeting about for an hour or two, took me out to the barn and said that he was bound to tell me something. After swearing me to secrecy, he told me that the monster that I had seen on Tuesday morning, for it was evidently the same one, had carried off one of his finest sheep this morning and that he had followed it to Seltzer's hole where it disappeared in the river. Mr. Redacted and I then went up to Mr. Redacted and told him what we had seen, and he told us that he had seen it twice last week, but was afraid to tell anyone about it for fear that they would not believe him. I can't imagine what kind of animal it can be or how it came to be in Seltzer's hole. We are going to keep a lookout for the monster tonight, and if he comes out, we will try to give him a good dose of buckshot. A number of people from the neighborhood have reported that they have seen large, strange-looking beasts at night on the hills next to, Cheathaven during the past 3 months. But no one paid any attention to the stories, thinking them the creature of an imaginative brain. But if the word of the three farmers referred to can be believed, then these reports must be true. Folks, there you have it. Some creepy water monsters. I've got a bunch more. I think I'm going to throw them on next week's Elite. Gather that up, too. All right, let's take a quick one, and we'll crack open the skull of Big Fizzy, and we'll see what he thinks about these water beasts. Y'all are listening to Expanded Perspectives. Scratching the surface some more. I got a pile. They'll be on next week's Elite Show. I've got several more stories to share of some wacky river and lake monsters. I still think this. The longer we've done it, the older I've gotten, the more I've read. The more educated. I hate saying the more educated because I'm not sure I'm educated to start with. But the more I have learned.
Yeah, right? No, you're still more educated.
I would be. I've got nowhere to go but up.
Well, it doesn't mean you're right. It doesn't mean you have a good education.
That's true.
But you are more educated.
Solid facts. And like, yeah, I've got nowhere to go but up. So I think a lot of what we saw from the late 1800s and all that, whenever they were reporting a lot of these crazy sightings, were just simply misidentification.
Like sturgeons and stuff like that?
There may have been other animals in the water that we weren't aware of, but some of these stories are just preposterous. I understand that they, you know, I want them to be real, but some of them I'm like, there's just no, it's like we pointed out, unless this thing is a, like Bigfoot or something, it has the ability to go between realms or transform between planes or whatever, like the Fringe TV show we talk about.
Yeah.
That would explain how they could do it. But a true flesh and blood animal in a lake, and the animal is the size it is, would put an awful large dent in the fishing population.
Right. Well, that's...
And then you still need breeding pairs. You need healthy populations of these animals. So whatever it is, I guess it's just for me. I just want to believe that it's misidentification. Yeah. I don't want to believe that there's real sea monsters and lake monsters.
Because you're already scared of the water.
Yeah, I don't like it.
You don't need to add that to it. No, I agree.
I'm not a fan.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. That is why I like lake monsters, whatever, for
whatever
reason. It's my least favorite of all the monster stories. And I don't know why. But I do like the stories.
It's just your least favorite.
It's probably
just
my least favorite
to get on board with.
For whatever reason, like, you know, I can wrap my head around aliens. Look how big space is. How could there not be aliens?
I'm going to hit
you. Like,
if
you're in a Loch Ness and it's a tiny lake, how could a plesiosaur live in there and no one sees it hardly, but every once in a while someone claims to?
There have been stories that I have found online about things around here closer. Well, I've even found them in a few books of these old stories of things that are right around here in our backyard where they claim that there are lake monsters. And I have never in my life heard these stories. There is the claim of one in Granbury, Lake Granbury. There's also the claim of one here in our lake.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I've seen those too. And like, I've lived here my entire life. I've never heard one person tell me that story.
I can tell you, I have spent hours, folks. When I worked in the municipality, we used to do lake sampling. I even talked about it on the show when we were doing it. We were on the boats all day, right? We had submersible pumps. We were pulling water samples at different levels of that lake all across it. 200-300 samples every quarter we would go out studying this. I know exactly how deep our lake is
at not
Lake
very.
Weatherford. Not very. I'm talking surprisingly shallow. The deepest point is at our high service pump station to pump water into the water plant. It's 38 feet. That's the deepest point of that lake. I will tell you, I have been all over that lake. You can see all around the lake.
Yeah.
There's nothing in there. I know when the lake was built. I met people that built the lake. There's nothing in there. Now, I can't say that for others, but there's nothing in the lake here. And I could safely assume there's nothing in the lake at Lake Granbury also.
No.
I'm just going to go out there and say that. Now, I'm not saying they don't exist everywhere. I'm just saying we don't have them here. So if you find stories about them being here, they're not here.
Well, that's what you should do, too, is everyone listening, go and explore on the interwebs your hometown or where you live or in areas and start looking for stories that are in and around your area.
Yeah.
I bet you'll be shocked that I'm not talking about a modern sighting because that could be more real. But if you've lived in a town your whole life, you'd be like, how come I never heard of this?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just like, it's wild.
Well,
how these stories.
Several accounts on some other podcasts that have come from in and around this area. And you're like, bro, no.
There was one I heard and it took place literally on the country road that I grew up on.
Yep.
And the way they were describing the scenario.
Not just on the road you grew up on. We're not talking like it's miles long. We're talking literally within a half a mile of where Kyle grew up.
Yeah. And this is rural. This is not a city street.
Yeah.
And the way they were describing that area and that road and what it looks like on the road was completely all wrong. I'm like, there's no way. I know that place intimately.
Right? Yeah.
It's like None of that happened. They made some claim about a guy murdering people and burying them on the property, and the county sheriff's department knows all about it. Well, Cam's wife works in that department, and like none of that's true. Well, did, right.
Now she's changed jobs on me, folks. After 29 years at the county, she's moved on
to OnlyFans.
Yeah, yeah.
She
I guess started she's doing a, that.
Who knows?
Who knows what she's got? She don't tell me anything, right? Except what to do.
Yeah.
I'm just like, yeah, you got it.
You probably need guidance.
I do 100%. I need to leave you with something, bro.
Okay.
I got to tell you this story. Lon's got this up. He knows how I am with headlines. There's been a centipede humanoid encountered in Brazil.
Centipede humanoid.
That's right.
In Brazil. Yeah, give them some acai bowls.
That's what it was. It was in acai whenever they got it out of there. This is what it says. Hold on now. Let me get this thing pulled up here so I can read it. Oh, my computer's messing with me.
I think
me.
Somebody had a little bit too much fun at Carnival. And then they hallucinated what they see. They were drinking.
You think they're acai fermented?
What's the drink that they like to drink there? Oh, I can't think of it. It's not a mojito. It's something similar. And I don't remember.
Is it gapadinhas?
I don't remember.
That's something I think we had to. So listen to this.
One of my good friends is married to a Brazilian girl, and she used to make
them. Oh, yeah.
But I can't think of the name. Go ahead.
It was the third day of February in 2012 in the Brazilian state of Rio Grande. My sisters, my mother, and I went to have some fun on a beach very far away from our home. Our mother had rented a house of a friend for a few days, which we used while going to and coming back from the beach. It was one of those very dirty beaches where trash was dumped all around, and not that many people were going to it, but for us, it was very fun. I even remember joking with my sister that there are probably sharks on this beach. It was pretty hot also, and I have the skin of a vampire. So after the first day on the beach, I was looking like Mr. Krabs and had to stay in the house while they went to have fun, which for me was okay. I'm kind of introverted anyway. I'll stop and tell y'all right now, my skin is like that of the belly of a catfish. Bro, I get in the sun, I go from red to real red, and then once that's gone, I go back to red. I don't tan. No, I don't have that ability, man. I just burn and then heal and reburn again. All right? Bunch of that pasty skin of mine. So
it's that Scottish background you got.
Yeah, I'm not meant to be in direct sunlight. I'm supposed to be where it's cloudy, cold. Says one day, my mother and my sisters, except for the youngest one, all had to go to some specific place. One went to color their nails, the other went to get a massage, and two went back to the beach, and my mom was going to go to the club with some of her friends. So my young sister went to sleep, and basically it was just me in this two-floor house, which was way bigger than the home I was raised in. The place was kind of creepy, and it didn't help that the moon that night was full. I was a young and stupid child who was scared by the creepy night and also full of energy, so I jumped over the fence of our house by climbing over it. My thoughts at the time were, of course, stupid. I was going to go look for my mother. I did that without thinking about stuff like the possibility of me getting kidnapped or taken by someone or something. This was Brazil, after all, and the street crime is also very high. Anyway, I walked a little bit around the town, but then realized I was lost. I was utterly overwhelmed by the same modern buildings, and I had no idea of where I was. I also had no idea where my mom was. I knew where she had went, but I didn't know where that place was. After the fear of being lost fully took over, I decided to give up and go back to the house. But I didn't know where the house was, so I just started walking around.
Can you imagine being lost in like a favela in Brazil?
Oh my God, no. No!
That's more terrifying than centipede humanoids.
1,000%, yes. Says there were a few people around that night, and I was just too anxiety-filled to ask anyone who I saw for directions. Eventually, the road mixed with the path of dirt. It sort of looked like the path in front of the house, so I thought, well, I'm going in the right direction. So I walked and found a beach. Not the beach where I went with my sisters, but a beach nonetheless. But little me didn't know that. So I ran to the beach because I thought, well, I could find my two sisters there and they'll just bring me back home. However, they were not on the beach, but something else was. This beach had those rocks leading up to the outside of the water. You know, those spiked rocks that normally sink ships? Well, one of them was all the way into the sand, and I kept seeing something moving beside it from the corner of my vision. So I just looked at the rock. Then something came out from beside it. This thing seemed to be the size of an adult man to me. It stood straight, it had legs and feet, but it wasn't human, and the biggest proof was the left arm. You know centipedes, those black things with 1,000 legs? His left arm was like
100,
that.
100.
Exactly.
Millipedes with 1,000.
I'm just reading what is written.
Okay, go ahead.
His left arm was like that. The thing extended to the ground, and it moved like it had a life of its own. I could see all the little legs moving. The whole body was weird, not just the centipede arm. You know the guy, the green guy from The Nightmare Before Christmas? This man was kind of like that, but made of skin with an egg-shaped head. Now, I don't know what the man did after he saw me, because after seeing him in the clear moonlight with the ocean backdrop, I fell in love. No, I'm kidding. It said I was absolutely terrified and just straight up took off. I bolted. I ran away as far as I could from that beach, not looking back. Eventually, while running in the path of dirt, one of my sisters did find me. It looked like they'd been looking for me for a while. And once we got to the house, I got scolded by my mother, who was angry as the devil for me running away. She thought I was going to get kidnapped or something. I did tell this story to my sisters, and obviously they found it to be unbelievable. In fact, the only one that believes me is the youngest, but she also believes in all the witchcraft stuff, so I guess her belief is already a little skewed. To be clear with you, I don't believe in the supernatural, like werewolves or Bigfoots or Greys or any of that. I think all of it is a conspiracy theory and stupid beliefs based on zero proof. But to this day, I believe that man thing was real. The memory still is very vivid in my mind. L.
How could it not be? It's not every day you're just strolling on a beach
and see a dude with a centipede arm.
I just text my friend. It's caipirinha.
That's it. That's what I, okay, I can't pronounce it, but yes, I've had those.
Yeah, and they're quite, it's like a mojito.
Yeah,
and different, but
I think I like them better.
I do too, but they are strong.
Yeah. They'll get on you.
There's been a time where I had a couple caipirinhas.
And I also like Brazilian steakhouses.
Oh,
I'm not going to lie. Are you kidding?
Dude, why'd you have to bring that up? I'm hungry.
Well, we get it wrapped up. We need to go.
Fogo de Chao and Texas de Brazil.
Brazil!
I think of Blanco when I think of Brazil, the old Street Fighter character. Remember? Yes.
I think of Royce Gracie choking dudes that were unbeknownst to why he was wearing his pajamas in the cage the very first time he started fighting.
Boy, it's funny when USADA started testing. Boy, those Brazilian champs all fell off. I'm just saying.
There's a lot of champs fell off whenever USADA. But I think they're going to pull USADA. They're going to do away with it.
I think you're right.
I personally am okay with it. If you
want to
take stuff and get in there and punch other people and let other people punch you, take all you want.
Like Ubereem and those guys. I like juicing in my mixed martial arts. I like juicing in my baseball.
I love juicing in my baseball.
Right. I like juicing in the Tour de France. Let them do it. Who cares?
Let's see what we can accomplish. Right?
Yeah. It's voluntary. You're voluntarily signing up for it. It's not like you're getting drafted into the Tour de France. Or
nobody
MLB.
Held a gun to your head and said, you're going to play baseball and we're going to pay you a bunch.
All of it.
Let them do it. I want to see what happens. If you're willing to take it, I'm willing to watch. If you don't like it, here's what they need to do. They need to split it. You can have a regular baseball league, and then you can have the juice league.
Hear me out.
Okay. And then we'll just go ahead and let it work itself out to who watches what. Which one of those groups is going to make more money?
Average
old boys out there playing. And I'm all for Natty. I love watching people Natty accomplish it. But let me ask you this. All of y'all out there that are NASCAR fans, would you still watch it if they just use regular cars? If you just went and got them off the lot and raced them?
They're modeled after regular cars. Yeah. It says Monte Carlo on it.
Yeah.
But it's nothing that
a
Monte Carlo has.
I can write Monte Carlo on anything, right? If all you use stock cars, they're supposed to be stock. They're not stock.
Yeah. I like the old days of baseball where you had Mark McGwire and
Jose Canseco.
Those guys were juiced. Right?
The Bash Brothers.
You know, that's another thing. I think another conspiracy theory is I don't think steroids are bad for you.
Oh, hot take. Here we go, folks.
Look at guys like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone. They're still dicking the juice.
Stallone looks amazing.
They're like 80.
Yeah, Stallone's actually 106.
Yeah.
He was, looks great. Anyway,
anyways.
What don't look great is a dude with a centipede arm.
That is.
Or, I'm sorry, a millipede arm.
Yeah. Yes, please. Please get it right. Right.
So yeah, there's it. What do you got going on, homie?
Not much this weekend. There's something going on. Caleb has prom.
Oh, hey now, hey.
So I got to go do a photo shoot at Shandor Gardens.
And then we're supposed to be meeting up with, I think maybe the Veronicas in a few weeks.
Oh yeah, that's this month.
Yeah, we get to go watch the girls sing, get to hang out with Logan, meet everybody and all that stuff.
Yeah.
They're killing it, bouncing around all, they're doing a U.S. tour. If you haven't, get online, look it up, the Veronicas, check out what they're doing. They're on the U.S. tour, making their way around. I think they were just in Denver not long ago.
And if you want to get the best bow, traditional bow on the planet, go to BobLeeBows.com.
Bob Lee, is it bow? It's Bob Lee Archery.
I don't know. Just search Bob Lee Bows. You'll find it.
Yeah.
Very, very cool.
He was a big, look, Bob Lee was there with Fred Bear, with Glenn St. Charles. He was on the Little Delta. Any of you guys that are into that stuff that don't know or you want to get into it, look, check out Bob Lee. I'm telling you, it's awesome stuff. And it was here in Texas. And look, it's been around forever.
Right. If you have any cool stories you'd like to share with me and Cam, as well as the listening audience, you can email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com, or you can call the show, 888-393-2783. That's 888-393-BRUD. And if you want to listen to more of Expanded Perspectives, don't forget about our Patreon.
What are you covering on The Elite this time?
I am going to be talking about some scary and creepy and frightening alien abductions.
Oh, more. I can't. I'm not listening.
Go to Expanded Perspectives Elite on Patreon to sign up over there. That's about all the time we have for this week, folks. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.